instead of depending on a single AI technology, what we've built is a system of checks and balances. And that means that we're not dependent on any one process to be fully accurate. We can check that against other processes, again, and we enable the humans to identify areas that they should double-click on, as it were.
Welcome to AI for Pharma Growth, the podcast from pioneering pharma artificial intelligence entrepreneur, Dr. Andre Bates. This show aims to demystify AI for all those in biopharma, from startup biotech right through to big pharma. Each episode focuses on all things AI and future tech related to help pharma execs to navigate through the and benefit from the sometimes confusing but magical world of AI-powered tools to grow and get real-world results.
Today's episode is using AI for cutting IND application time. Now, typically, an IND can take a team 4 months to write, but that's only if all the supporting data is chosen and available. And of course, choosing the right supporting data is also a very time-consuming effort, but perhaps not anymore with AI. Today, I'm with Ari Caroline, the CEO of Weave Bio, a company that uses AI to speed up and automate a lot of IND application processes. Happy to have you on the show, Ari. Can we start with you telling me a little bit about your background, how you got into this and where you started?
Yeah, I'm happy to. So I spent actually most of my career in academic medicine at Memorial Sloan Kettering, where I was the first chief analytics officer. I had helped to develop the in-house analytic capabilities there, and that it grew into more of a department, and then finally the role as chief analytics officer. We did a lot of the pioneering work in real-world data, including you know, some of the first experimental use of synthetic control arms.
We I'm very interested in that space for sure.
Oh, I'd love to tell you more. We also developed one of the first in-house machine learning teams with one of the first deployed machine learning capabilities for clinical trials matching that we built at Sloan Kettering. Throughout that process, one of the most beautiful things, and that one of the things that kept me at Sloan Kettering for so long, was working with the amazing clinician scientists, the scientists in general who were developing these really revolutionary capabilities. Seeing how those things could turn into real innovations for patients, but also then seeing the very painful process that everybody had to go through with really a forced dominant strategy that the only way you can really commercialize something is building it as its own company and building all of the infrastructure around it. So there were some opportunities along the way for me to go into that entrepreneurial space myself. I kept the dream that we could, continue to build within, an academic medical center with all the resources we had in terms of the data and, the people. But eventually reached the limit where we saw that there was only so far that you can go within an organization like that. And so started my first company, which was called Dot AI, which was based in that creating better real-world data for a clinical decision. But that was quickly bought into a company called Tempus Labs, where I served as the senior vice president of real-world data for 2 years. But I had the bug in me, I'd actually pulled the trigger and done the work, gotten a taste of what it's like starting a new company and seeing what you can actually build. I was looking for the next opportunity, you could say.
Yeah. And what about Weave? Were you one of the founders of Weave?
I was the one who initiated it. I think there was a lot that I learned through my time at Tempus. I consider myself, I would say, an overall systems thinker. And that's what inspired, the ideas behind the first startup. But seeing what just doesn't make sense, like what we could potentially do differently, as not just for, you know, like to fix like one little thing, but to identify that those levers, those individual things, but the things that are levers that would actually instantiate some level of larger change in the system as a whole. So in the case of the first startup Dot, it was the recognition that we're collecting the data in all the wrong ways. We're collecting the data, as somebody put it to me yesterday, as like a cash register to get, you know, for billing purposes. Whereas, you know, we had the luxury at Sloan Kettering of seeing the value that you have when you have truly informed clinical data. And so what the power of having that clinical data could be, and systematically capturing the you know, using a clinical data model. So the, you know, similarly, I think what we started to see when interacting with a lot of biopharma companies was that there was a lot of slow replication of similar efforts, where there could have been, some innovations lend themselves quite well to being systemic innovations, but there wasn't a platform that would really allow for that. And so I started thinking about what a platform would look like, and how would we create the right incentives, and what are the key core capabilities that we would need to really get people to show the benefit of what happens when you have something like this. I reached out to a friend of mine, Shlomo, one of my co-founders, who I had met while he was at Yale Law School, started working through the ideas, and we moved it forward. We were quickly introduced to Uma Desser, who became our third co-founder and CTO, who was thinking in very similar ways and actually building toward some of these platform capabilities. But I would say after we hired our chief product officer, Brandon Rice, we really, you know, Brandon in instituted, I would say, some discipline in collapsing the superposition as it was, meaning you can have ambitions toward a platform technology, but you have to have your initial offering that is truly compelling. And what that initial offering is, was something that we had to really decide once and for all. And during one of our first early retreat with the team together, we're a remote first company. So the first time that we all got together, and that was in the mountains in North Carolina, it just became clear that, as boring as it seems, that the regulatory space is such a key area for what slows down, you know, the advancement of potential new therapeutics. And that we could help solve that. And we could, we saw very clearly that our platform did have that potential to do so, that it would change everything. It's another one of those levers. And so we did consolidated the thinking when decided if we're going to do this, we're going to do it right, and looked at, you know, the place where that's really at the nexus of every single new therapeutic, that takes all of the preclinical data and says, we think this is actually worth moving into human trials. And so it's right at that nexus between preclinical and clinical, and that's the IND. And it's as you said in the opening, it's a difficult, complex application, but we thought we could tackle it.
And you have. So tell me all about what Weave does. So this, I love this concept of really automating the IND, and because of all the complexity and all the data that's involved in that, in an IND, it seems like a really good place to start. But tell me how you do that.
Yeah, it truly is. It's right at that key nexus. But because it's there, it involves quite a bit as well. Everything that has been done prior to, you know, trying to advance something into clinical trials has to be really summarized in that IND. And these are often thousands of pages long. They are designed, they are written based on reports that they, that, you know, study reports that have been done sometimes by CROs, sometimes in-house, that themselves can be hundreds, even thousands of pages, and have to be summarized in a single section.
Yeah.
So bringing that together obviously is a non-trivial task, and there's a reason that nobody has created a capability like this before. But you know, we started to see obviously the potential with the large language models to allow us to tackle this type of problem. Mm-hmm. But obviously you have to overcome the challenges that large language models present themselves, right? This is not a space where you get to build fast and break things. It's not a space that allows for any hallucinations. Mm-hmm. I think if we created a product where there are submissions to the FDA that included hallucinations,
that wouldn't work very well. Quite
a quick fail.
But
that actually was core to how we were building our technology to start out with, which is to say, can we actually, in a structured way, think on a factual basis, but use the power of the large language models to actually generate text that's built on that factual basis.
Yeah. And how long did it take you to develop it? Because this seems like quite a huge undertaking.
You know, I'd like to say that, you know, the platform work that we had done beforehand, gave us a bit of a head start. But when we fully tackled this starting, you know, last year, it actually moved pretty quickly. There were some challenges that I'm sure we'll talk about, you know, in terms of being able to accurately and consistently extract information from tables to create new data tables. These are things that don't just naturally happen within the technology as it is now, that really require some degree of innovation. And others as well. Getting very consistent summaries of existing sections. So there were areas that we really had to dig deep on, mm-hmm. but the overall progress, I think, was surprisingly fast, considering that we started just in the middle of last year. We've hired an amazing team of engineers, designers, and with, you know, great product leadership under Brandon. And the team is just, you know, they deliver. They every single person who was joined has just come in as another adult in the room and been able to immediately contribute to features that we're working on.
That's amazing. And I love the fact that even though you've used large language models, you've eliminated hallucinations from the results that you're getting in what the output that's coming through, which is amazing. Could you tell me, like, could we look at some of the elements involved in drafting this? Obviously, data is a very big part of this. How does Weave help with the data and, you know, the data selection and pulling the right data in?
So let's just go over how AutoIND works. AutoIND is the initial offering that we've been working on, and that is actually has its first commercial release coming up in just a month from now.
Oh, wow. Timely.
Yeah. So this is timely conversation.
Yeah.
The way AutoIND works is we try to make it as simple as possible for those that are putting together the information. As I'm sure you know, right now this can be quite the painful process. You know, even if you have a really organized quarterback at the sponsor organization, they're often sending out emails saying, I need a summary of this. You know, where's this data here? Can somebody help me to extract the key information here? And a lot of that sometimes sits in email, you know, it can be in Microsoft SharePoint, sometimes in a Viva system, but it doesn't organize itself. A lot of manual effort. So we decided we want to make that as easy as possible. And so all you do is you take the underlying supporting reports, you upload them to our system. And the first process is something that was actually key to making this work for us, which is a concept extraction process where we read each individual report using some of our own technology and some of the existing LLM technology and identify what are the key elements, collect all of the metadata, the key features from that, identify what type of report it is and where that fits in into the overall application process. And it creates this really organized data room where all of these reports then sit. You can see what they are with a short summary, you know, like we say this is a single dose tox study, this is a repeat dose tox study, and say what are the key elements, you know, like what animals was it done on, you know, like was the, you know, if there was a CRO that did it, which organization did it, what the results were, what the arms were. And so now we have all of this really good structured information that we can use as part of the drafting process. Yeah. And then once you actually have in that data room reports the key information, source information that's necessary for each section, then there's another section where you're invited to actually start the drafting process, start mm-hmm. the generation. Obviously, there's a lot of dependencies in this. Mm-hmm. So as you draft one section, it'll tell you, well, now we have all the pieces we need for this other section.
Yeah.
And the same is true actually as you do updates, will prompt you to actually update any of the dependent sections as well. So we have this constantly evolving investigators brochure and other summary sections.
Yeah.
And then we make the process really easy to review. So you can then go in, see what the generated summaries look like. The goal there is just to be a first draft. It's not, you know, we don't pretend that we can do this completely automated. We call the product AutoIND, but it's truly, it's an automated first draft.
It's a collaborative process.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And then we have a review mode that we've been actually working on quite a bit recently that mm-hmm. just makes it as easy as possible to check, verify the information, look for any consistencies that have been introduced either by humans or, you know, look mm-hmm. for, you know, make sure that the AI has captured everything as we expected.
Mm-hmm.
We make it really easy to edit the text right within the platform, and to continue to use AI for suggestions. Like, you know, if you say you want, instead of giving the dosing specifics, just use the names of the arms of the study.
You know,
just give that information, give those instructions to our AI interface, and you'll see that section rewritten.
That's amazing. How complete is it at the end of the process?
You know, at the end of the process includes
the human, though, I guess then it's fully, yeah.
Interaction as well. And that's not a small part of what we're doing, you know, so enabling the humans to more easily, more efficiently, more completely and thoroughly review these drafts and, you know, do updates to these drafts is a key part of our offering here.
Yeah.
And that's part of the speeding up the process. So what I would say is that first draft, many of, you know, our initial partners tell us that that's often the most painful part of the process. And so just getting that out of the way is huge for them.
Yeah.
So maybe that gets you 40% of the way there. But then we're continuing along in the process and we're speeding up what happens after that as well.
Yeah. So from beginning to end, what would it take? How much time saving do you think there is with this?
Our promise initially to our our early partners is that we think we can cut the time in half easily.
Nice.
The potential here is actually to achieve much more. We're certainly looking at the potential, you know, like that in by the end of this year, you know, we could be potentially be cutting off 75% of the time, even more.
Wow, that's really impressive. And when you were working on the system, what data did you use to train the system?
So that's an interesting question because, as you know, and as I'm sure most of those who listen to this podcast would know well, this is quite, you know, like, sensitive proprietary data that you don't find a lot in terms of the, you know, what's available for public consumption.
Yeah.
And so getting a few examples of these was key to us starting this process.
Yeah.
But it turns out with the technology we have that we're not super dependent on massive training sets where we needed, you know, like hundreds and hundreds of full INDs with all of the source data to train the initial models. The models learn quite quickly. And since, you know, we're an experienced team that is not tackling, you know, these types of challenges for the first time, we were able to work with what we had initially We as soon as we got a couple of these full INDs with all of their source data, it really accelerated our work. And then each new example improves the model better.
So did you have a handful of pharma and biotech companies that were sharing their data with you and working with you to get to this first phase?
We have had a few early partners that have been very helpful in this process. One of them hopefully we'll be able to announce very soon. That's going to be one of our big launch partners.
When are you announcing that?
Hopefully in the next few weeks, but I'm going to hold back. Often, once you sign these things, there's a decision about, how to make these announcements and the timing. So
there's always a layer of legality around these things, of course. Sure. Yes. And you said it's quite easy for humans to make changes. So you've got a human in the loop at the moment, at least quite a way through the process, but it's really just speeding up a lot of what they're doing and they can make changes as they see fit, right?
Oh, I would say entirely through the process.
Entirely.
The human in the loop is key to this.
Yeah.
The only thing that, what the platform is doing is really interpreting the source information and just generating that first draft. But deciding, what the source information is to that you want to bring into the system, reviewing those drafts, augmenting them, where you need supplemental material, that's still all part of the human process. And our goal in this ultimately is to just empower and speed up the humans in doing this and being able to do quicker submissions, and I would say also better submissions.
I was just going to say more accurate potentially, because the AI, I see a lot of cases where, the AI actually, when we compare what the humans did and what the AI did, the AI is usually more accurate because humans make errors.
So it's interesting that you say that. We haven't had really consistent ways of measuring that until now.
Okay.
And that's been a key part of some of our recent research, which is creating the types of models that can accurately assess what we call faithfulness and consistency. Mm-hmm. So how faithful we are to the original source documents, and how consistent the material is with itself. So if there could be two source studies that even contradict each other, and we want to be able to identify that.
Yeah.
And that's going to allow us now to quantify the accuracy either from human or from any given AI model in ways that we haven't been able to until now, where we could say, give very concrete numbers for elements like faithfulness and consistency for an entire IND and compare apples to apples. Well, how well is this AI model working? How does it compare to the number of mistakes that we expect from the humans as well?
Yeah.
And also, I think this is, from a time perspective, one of the big elements is when you get your application sent back to you from by FDA or EMA, a list of additional questions. And if we can anticipate those beforehand and capture them ahead of time, that can be a huge cost.
Oh, and I love that. Have you already built that in, or is that on the next phase of your plan?
So there are some elements that have already been built in. It's actually a lot more is going in the next couple of months.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, because AI is so good at prediction. And if you've got the right data and you see the questions that come back from old ones,
The way I put this is that instead of depending on a single AI technology, what we've built is a system of checks and balances.
Yeah.
And that means that we're not dependent on any one process to be fully accurate, but we can check that against other processes again, and we enable the humans to identify areas that they should double click on, as it were.
Yeah.
In aggregate, the result is a much cleaner, more consistent, complete submission.
Yeah. That's amazing. And with your early pharma and biotech partners, is there any case studies you can share?
there will be some case studies that we'll be working on with some of these initial partners. The release schedule for those has a lot of different variables associated with it.
Yes,
but it is our goal. It is very much our goal to not just say, we have some magic, trust us.
Exactly. You need people to see what's happened.
Yes. To show them not only that they can trust us, but why they can trust us and what we've been working on, what challenges we've confronted, what's worked and what very frankly hasn't worked, where the technology is more successful and less successful, and what we do to counterweight the challenges, and to work on areas that are more challenging. And be as transparent as possible. We understand how complex this space is. We know that we're not in a typical startup space where you get to build fast and break things. And we want to do this right, and we want to bring, our partners along in the process.
Yeah. Well, a big advantage to be an early partner because, it's being built for them, basically, isn't it? So.
We've heard that from them surprisingly grateful ways. It's quite heartwarming, as you can imagine, to hear that level of excitement from your early partners, to see how their feedback is quickly implemented by a really experienced team. And yes, it's been a very rewarding part of the process.
Yeah, I can imagine. It's incredible. So you're going to be doing the announcement soon at an undisclosed date. What's next after that for Weave?
Well, so the initial IND submission, as you know, is, just a point in time. It is a complex initial submission, but then has all these elements that follow it and has everything that comes before it. Yeah. And those are very natural areas for us to expand our offering. So we want, the subsequent submissions, that are come in the form of clinical reports, and the separate submissions, annual reports, modifications to a protocol, all of that. Once you have everything in this really nice package, it makes sense to continue on with that package as you move along. And so we will be that's obviously an area that we hope to very quickly add on and offer to our partners as well. But I'd say in the other direction as well, right? So as you're, not quite ready for an IND, there are a lot of studies going on and you're just organizing that information and you can start doing that in our data room. I think that makes things a lot easier. We've been playing around with an experimental capability that offers some suggestions in terms of what type of experiment might be the next one that really strengthens this application.
Yeah.
There are pre-IND briefings that are being done currently. So we can go in both directions, continuing on in the process with our partners, but also making the tool more and more useful to them earlier in the process as well.
Yeah, really nice. Congratulations. I mean, very impressive work. And so quick. Incredible. I'm sure that there's a lot of listeners that would like to know more about this. And so for anyone who would like to get in touch with Ari and his team, if you go to weave.bio, you will be able to see more about it and contact Ari and the team. Thank you so much. Really, really impressive work. Really looking forward to the announcements. And I'm going to watch this space.
Thank you. This was a wonderful conversation and we're excited to show it to the world.
Thank you. I'm looking forward to it myself.
Thanks for listening to this episode of AI for Pharma Growth. If you have received huge value from this show, or maybe this episode has highlighted how you can use AI in your company, then we would love for you to support the show by leaving us a 5-star rating. Please make sure you hit the subscribe or follow button on your podcast app now to make sure you never miss an episode.